What's going on, everyone? You're listening to the Long Island Sound Podcast, your source for everything Isles and the only Islanders podcast to scratch Matt Martin, back-to-back games, and debut two 19-year-old prospects the first 2 weeks of the season. I'm one of your hosts, Damon Vetteri, and I'm joined by the man, the myth, the legend, Ben Cohen.
What an introduction. Thank you so much.
Yep. And this other guy, Kenny Ivero.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. How's everyone doing?
Good, man. We're good. I'll tell you why I'm really good. What a win against the Blues. And I just have to play this. Because it was just such a good win.
Yeah.
Such a good win.
Let that marinate.
Oliver Wahlstrom debuts. Dramatic comeback. I mean, what's not to like? But we're going to get into that. First, Kenny, everyone wants to know, give us an update on the squirrel situation.
Dude, a couple days ago, you know, the normal time, 7 in the morning, they get up, crack of dawn, they're doing their thing, wake us up pretty much every day. Past few days, it's been silent. So I've come to the conclusion that they both got hit by cars and they're dead. So I think nature gave them what they deserved, you know? That's awesome. That's the diagnosis. Or they're dead in our ceiling and we're going to smell them in a couple weeks.
There's no other option besides death?
Death. I mean, there's...
That smell, you're making me think of, like, in Breaking Bad where they have the thing where, like, when they enclose the house for the...
Fumigation? Yeah.
And they, like, they cook there. That's what you're making me think of, what's going to happen to your house when you start smelling your smells in 2 weeks.
Dude, well, maybe the squirrels are cooking up in the attic.
No, dude, literally, like, honestly, like, it's possible. Like, they could have easily got hit by cars. Squirrels get hit by cars all the time, you know?
But both of them? Well,
maybe not the same car. They could have been two separate cars. Just a really tragic day, you know?
You could just go up in the attic and check for them, but, you know, we'll leave that for another day. We'll leave that for another day. Ben, how's your life been, man?
It's been pretty good, actually. I've got to take a PSAT tomorrow, and it's annoying because, like, you don't even get, like, the normal stress that comes with, like, a regular SAT. So it's, like, it's not even that I'm stressed about it. It's just I'm pissed off that I have to sit in a gym for 5 hours.
Why do you always have to go with something that makes me feel so old? Every time. I don't think
that's changed. If there's one thing about school that has not changed in 20 years, it's about taking standardized tests in really, really hot rooms. Although it's at least true. It shouldn't be that hot.
It's true. Well, good luck to you tomorrow, Ben. But before you get into that, we've got to talk about some games. And we've got quite a few to cover. We've got 4 games to cover. And we're going to obviously go in order. So that means that we've got to start with the absolute roast job of James Neal just taking it to the Islanders. So Isles play the Oilers on the 8th. They lose that game 5-2. And James Neal scores 4 goals on Varlamov. Varley gets a start. He goes up against returning Islanders legend Mikko Koskinen. And Ben, you were right. This was the debut of Noah Dobson.
And he looked good.
Hey, I was right too.
You jumped on his coattails.
Sorry.
He looked good though, did he not?
Oh, I thought he looked great. But this is your time to shine, Ben. You got to tell us all how you were right and I was wrong. Johnny Boychuk gets scratched. You called it, man. You called it. So take a victory lap.
I could say that though, but you said on because I said it on Twitter when the lineups came out before the game. And you were like, you tweeted me back like this way too long hashtag of like, act like you've been there before. And it was humbling. So I'm going to act like I've been there before.
That's good. You're learning. Because the answer or the response on Twitter before that and what prompted me to put the hashtag in was he told me to F off. Ben told me to F off on Twitter because he was right. So, you know,
that's fair. That's fine.
Good. You know what? Win with grace. I love it. So so the game started well, right? Isles jump up 1-0. Bovey, nasty breakaway, shorthanded from a great pass from Leo Komarov. And I'm feeling good. Like, Bovey's been on fire. He's, you know, he's got the crowd amped. He goes backhand, top shelf. Great play. And then it kind of all went downhill from there. And the James Neal show began. So Oilers tied up 1-1. Devon Taves gives up the puck to Neal. The Oilers are kind of cycling in the Islanders zone. And Neal takes a slap shot from the top of the circle that gets past Varley. I don't know if Mayfield screened him or not, but if it was a screen, it was a high screen because there was no one in front. And that was kind of the beginning of me saying, uh-oh, I don't know if Varley's got it tonight because Neal just beat him clean. I mean,
yeah, I think he should have. Yeah, he should have had that. He should have had that shot. Like I said, I felt like those, you know, like every goalie lets it in. Lehner let in those goals last year, but, you know, Lehner did shut the door after letting in a goal like that, and obviously that wasn't the case when, you know, Neal scored his second on the power play off that terrible angle, which, you know, that was the next goal of the game, and I thought that that was an even worse goal. I think he read that completely wrong, and that was a turning point, you know? I think the team probably
gave up,
you know, lost confidence, you know? If you're always going to start letting goals like that in, it's not going to be a good game, so...
The floodgates were open.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. So that's coming off of Brock Nelson's double minor penalty. Late in the first period. And, like, I guess Varley was kind of cheating for the pass across, yeah. And he wasn't on his post, and Neal saw it and just beat him on a bad angle. And that was, you know, Neal's second and Varley's second kind of stinker, I thought. And then it just continued. This one wasn't really Varley's fault. Another power play goal, middle of the second. Neal finishes off his hat trick. Draisaitl, being Leon Draisaitl, makes a beautiful pass. And Neal, you know, Neal's good in front of the net. He just chips it over Varley's shoulder. Not a whole lot you can do. I mean, that's
no,
just
– that was
those
goal.
Are good
that's
players.
Good goal. It's
yeah,
a good goal.
Those are good players making good plays. But now it's 3-1. And then the Oilers just, I don't know, the Islanders kind of melted down, and the Oilers just were playing with them at this point. Like, 2 minutes later, Zach Cassian buries a tic-tac-toe play. You've got Cassian playing with McDavid and Draisaitl, and it's just, you know, that was just them just making the Islanders look stupid in their own zone. I mean, those guys can move the puck well, and they did, and Cassian just tipped it in. And that would be the end of the night for Semyon Varlamov. So he gets pulled, Grice comes in, and James Neal gets his fourth of the game. He gets a quick shot off of Yurcho's pass, and it was like just on the ground. It was a low, hard shot, quick release from Neal. I mean, that's where he makes his money, is quick release. And Grice just, you know, I mean, it's tough to come into a game cold like that. So I can't really say much to that. But
After Neal scored his fourth, I just couldn't help but think, like, why couldn't the Islanders make a trade for a guy like this, one for one with like any one of our one guys? Like, the Islanders could just use a guy like Neal. Yeah. I mean,
Andrew Ladd's better than Milan Lucic.
Yeah, but Lucic brings something. You have to remember, like, Lucic, so if we're going to talk about the trade and everything, Lucic brought to Calgary what they needed, which was a nuclear deterrent, a guy who was going to throw the fists, a guy who's going to be a good locker room guy for them. And it wasn't working with Neal, and sometimes it just doesn't. I mean, Neal's going to finish a lot because he's not going to have a lot of heat on him. That's all going to be on McDavid and Draisaitl, so... you know, I thought I think it's probably going to be a good trade for both of those guys. Now, I think at that point, Kenny, on the fifth goal, I think that was when you texted me, and this might be a good name for the podcast episode. I'm out. I'm getting Chinese food. But if you did go get Chinese
food. I did. It wasn't good Chinese food either.
You missed the best part of the game, which was.
I did miss this.
Yeah. Which was Noah Dobson's first NHL point. And I think a glimpse of what we can expect from this kid, he gets the puck from his blue line, he drives to the net, and he puts an absolute beautiful pass on the tape to Matt Martin, who makes it 5-2. The game was pretty much already over at this point, but it was great to see Dobson getting in there and kind of doing what we all think he can do. And he was a plus one for the game. So, really,
I think Letty was also plus one for the game because he played on with Dobson. And it showed.
I have to check Letty's numbers on that. I know for sure Dobson was a plus one because I remember you tweeted Letty, that, double checked. To me, it was really just not a good game for the Islanders. I just thought that they weren't in it for most of the night. They didn't look like they were inspired. The stat line kind of shows that a little bit. Shots were 27-27. The Isles actually won the faceoff battle 58-42. So I thought that was good. Oilers power play went 2 for 5. Al's power play went 0 for 2. Hits were 19-12 in favor of the Islanders, but hits I don't really put too much stock in because I think most of the time the team that's chasing the puck is the one throwing the hits. Edmonton had a slight advantage in block shots, 17-16. Isles had 25 giveaways on the game to Edmonton's 14, and the Oilers had 8 takeaways to the Isles' 7. So, you know, when you look at the stat line, you know, the basic stats, it pretty much tells the picture of the game. Advanced stats, this surprised me. So Corsi, the Isles actually won the Corsi battle 54.55% to Edmonton's 45.45%, where it tilts in Edmonton's favor. High danger chances, Edmonton had 60% of the high danger chances, and then expected goals for percentage was pretty even, 50.6% for Edmonton, 49.4% for Isles. So,
and that's why, you know, it's 100% why advanced stats are ridiculous.
Yeah, well, there's, look, they tell part of the story like everything else. There's no perfect stat.
It's just, note that, so. But yeah, I don't know.
It gives you the sense, I think, of, because I know that after the, who did the Islanders play before the Blues? Why am I blanking? Panthers. After the Panthers game, I got a tweet. I believe it was from Jeffrey Meltzer, so shout out to you on Twitter. And he was asking, like, do you think this was Islanders hockey? And we'll get to that later because we're, you know, we're going in order. But one of the things I said is if you look at these three specific advanced stats, usually the Islanders are the opposite. They lose in Corsi, they lose in goals for percentage, and they win in high danger chances. That's Islander hockey in advanced stats. And this was the exact opposite. And I think that the game showed that.
For sure, for sure. I mean, I just thought Dave looked Tippett sloppy.
I mean, Tippett plays a pretty defensive style, so he just maybe just out defense the Islanders, you know? Yeah, look what he's done with them so far. I mean, I know that he's known as a guy who's very responsible defensively, and obviously he's brought a team that already has the offense, some structure defensively, and look what that did for the Islanders last year with Trotz. You know, why not with Edmonton?
I mean, Edmonton's a good team, not to take anything away from them. I mean, I think that win against the Isles brought them to 5-0 on the season. So, I mean,
it's the goaltending going to hold up, though. You know, is Koskinen going to be able to hold
up? That's the thing. I mean, we certainly didn't challenge him much.
Is Talbot still there?
No.
Who's their backup?
Koskinen is their backup. We played their starter. We played the backup 4 out of the first 5 games of the season. So
that's because we're a powerhouse and teams respect us.
Yeah, their goalie is
Mike Smith, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There you go, Mike Smith.
He's not started well for them.
Who? Mike Smith. Man, his equipment. Man, his kit is gorgeous. It's like dark blue and orange. I love it. I wish one of the other goalies would do that
too. You know, he was a Phoenix guy for a long time.
Yeah. He likes Tippett. Tippett's a good coach, man. Tippett's going to get everything he can out of that roster. Will they continue to be the wagon that they are right now? Probably not. I'm sure they'll come back down to earth. But any team with McDavid and Draisaitl is a team
you wild card, at least in the West, I think, right?
Maybe, yeah. So I wanted to get your quick thoughts, guys, on this. We talked about Dobson. I thought he played a real good game. He went in over Boychuk. Dobson had 18 minutes, 50 seconds of ice time. He was a +1. You know, what'd you guys think of his game?
I thought he looked great. You didn't notice him out there, which is also kind of a good thing. Because he wasn't making mistakes. Obviously the play he made to Matt Martin just shows the offensive upside, which is what we're kind of lacking. Even last year, we really didn't get a lot of offense out of our defense. And even, you know, so far this year, we have a bunch of guys with 1 point and no goals. And if he can bring, you know, a little bit of offensive upside and be good, responsible, play good, responsible defense, then, you know, looks like we got someone. And he's only 19 years old, so it's just going to get better.
For sure. And you look at the, I think when people have talked about Dobson as a prospect, they talk about him as an all around defenseman. And usually, like, when you talk about a guy, you think of, you know, defense first defenseman, you look at Pelech. Offense first defenseman, you look at Taves. Or like an Erik Karlsson type job. When you think about an all-around defenseman with Dobson, it almost takes away from how good he is both offensively and defensively, because all-around doesn't say, you know, in that you know, umbrella term that he's really good offensively. Because the reason why it says he's good all around is because he's also really good defensively, not because he's not really good offensively. So it almost takes away from how good he is, to me at least. And it can almost, you know, catch you by surprise when he shows how good he is on both sides of the ice.
Yeah, I definitely will subscribe to that, because I was kind of surprised when he jumped in the play and made that pass. And I think that's part of him just getting used to the speed of the game, getting used to what his line mates are doing, what his defensive partner's doing. I mean, Ben, we talked about from the prospect game through preseason, and as he got more comfortable with his defensive partner, he just started to take more risks and jump in the play more. And you're only going to see him improve with that as he continues on and as he develops and matures as a player. So I think that's really exciting to see. I want to shift a little bit to goaltending. We talked about Varlamov. This was not a good game from him. I think he'd be the first to admit that and say that. The D didn't do him any favors either. So I'm not just going to say that this game was 100% his fault. It wasn't. This was a team loss through and through. This was an ugly game. But I think what you saw here was a little bit of the fears of some of the fans, where they went, when we lose Leonard like that and Varley comes in, you know, are there games that he's going to not keep us in? Are there games that, you know, he's going to lose for us? And I thought he put us behind the eight ball this game with a couple of real softies to start. And you can't be doing that with our team like this, the way it's constructed, where we're not going to score 5, 6, 7 goals a night. You can't be letting in clunkers. And that's a little bit of my concern, is it's kind of building a little bit, because we've seen a couple of games where he's been so-so.
I agree. Yeah, it's a little alarming. But hey, Greiss has looked, you know, he's doing, thank God for him. He's so solid. I mean, if you want to call him a backup, that's fine. But if it wasn't for him, I'd be real panicked.
But if, I mean, everything you said was spot on, Damon, to start. But I think you highlighted it really well, where the defense didn't do him any favors. And, you know, ultimately the goaltender is the guy that's going to get the spotlight, because, you know, ultimately it's black and white. Should the goaltender have stopped that? Yes or no? Or it's not black and white, but it appears black and white. Whereas you can say, Tate should have done better there. Letty should have done better there. Pulak should have done better there. I've said that way too many times, which we'll get into later. But I think it gets to a point where Varlamov is highlighted for a few reasons. A, because he's the goaltender. And B, because he's Leonard's replacement. He's the fan favorite replacement. And yes, he did not have a good game by any means. But it was, to me, it was really early to you know, jump on the, you know, Varlamov out wagon. That was a little bit uncalled for me. I think and I don't think I'm saying that. I don't think a lot of people were at that stage, but it's hard, because also we're saying this, you know, this Tuesday night, we're saying this 3 days removed from him absolutely shutting the door on Florida. So it's hard to, you know,
right,
go back to feelings then, you know, after such a great performance that he had.
Yeah. I think there's always going to be overreactions on Twitter. I mean, that's just the nature of the beast. And I guess the only other thing to really touch on was Barry showed that he's not afraid to have his stars ride the pine. Brock Nelson took 6 penalty minutes and he sat down for a majority of the second period. So kind of a weird thing. He doesn't usually take penalties. It was kind of just weird how he was playing that game. But, you know, and 4 of the 6 was a double minor. That was just kind of a lazy play by him. So that was really the only other, I thought, item of note this game. Isles hit the road after that. Play their first road game. A rematch against the team that knocked them out of the second round with a broom, the Carolina Hurricanes. They played this game on the 11th, and it was their first of a back-to-back. They would play the Hurricanes on Friday, the Panthers on Saturday. So Thomas Greiss gets the nod. He always plays well in Raleigh. We know that. He goes against Peter Mrazek, and the Isles would fall for the second straight time by a score of 5-2. And this game was probably even more lopsided than the Oilers game, although the Isles felt that they played a little bit better and got back to their structure. Loses game 5-2. Carolina gets on the board pretty quickly. Brock Nelson gets stripped on his on the blue line, and Timo Teravainen finishes a 2-on-1 with Dougie Hamilton, and really Grice had no chance on this one. I mean, that was just the Hurricanes showing their speed. They are a scary team in transition, and they will jump on you quick, and they showed that right away. Isles tie it up 1-1. Brock Nelson finishes a beautiful pass from what I would call the elite forward, Josh Bailey, on the power play to even up the score. And I thought on this play, and shout out to the power play, I think they're now 3-for-11 on the season. Kenny and I were just talking about it, firing at about 27% or so. Bailey made two great passes on this play. The first, he passes to Eberle through traffic to kind of open things up. Eberle gives it back to Bailey, and Bailey finds Nelson right in front. And that just, that play, anybody who ever complains about Josh Bailey, just watch that clip and shut up. That's all I have to say to you.
That was a beautiful play. And that's why it's like so frustrating. You have so many elite passers with no structure last season. Now you see a coach that has a game plan for these guys, and they're just snapping it around. And it's like they know what they want to do three passes before, where last year they were only thinking about what to do once they got the puck to their stick, and it looked like that. Like there was no like game plan. So like you said, you know, foreshadowing the power plays, you know, 3-for-11, and it looks like it's an asset for us. You know, when a penalty's drawn, it's not like you're like throwing your head back. It's you're excited because we have a chance of doing something.
Yeah. Their pace has definitely improved.
Yeah. It's great. It
definitely looks like Nelson bounced back from sitting on the bench, which is such a great sign for guys to react so well to, I guess.
Yeah. Well, he had 4 penalty minutes the game before that too. So, I mean, just at this point he had 10 penalty minutes going into the game.
And then he came back and scored. So,
yeah. Right. And also he needed to kind of make up for losing the puck on Carolina's first goal. So, you know, he's had kind of an up and down season to start, but you know what? Barry's leaning on him more, and he's going to, you know, learn that he's got to play a full game. And these are just, this is part of his growth. He's still a young player as much as, you know, he's kind of an old guy in that locker room now. He's still learning to develop and becoming that true second line center that we need. So Carolina gets back on the board. They take the lead 2-1. Brett Pesce, he's in tight on Grice. It was a nice pass from Svechnikov. What bothered me here is that the Isles win the draw in their own zone, but Taves can't clear. He fumbles the puck. Hurricanes keep buzzing, and eventually they bury it. And I thought that they weren't strong enough in front of the net. I thought Eberle didn't look good in front of the net there. One hand on the stick, not playing tight, tough D. And Carolina's going to burn you like that. That this team works all the time. And this was a you know, perfect example of that. Islanders even it up on a Johnny Boychuk, Johnny Rockets bomb on the power play. I mean, this was him in clean, one-on-one slapper from the, you know, from almost the blue line on Mrazek, and he just beats him clean. Then he takes his glove off, does the finger gun, and shoots him. I mean, I thought that was cool.
Johnny Rocket.
Yeah, it was pretty ballsy.
I don't.
He doesn't care, man. He doesn't. And I tell you what, if I'm Carolina, I'm trying to take his head off after that because he's showing up your goaltender, and that's you know, it's not like that in the NHL anymore.
I got a shout out. I don't like the Boston Bruins. I really don't. I live in Bruins territory, but Boychuk obviously used to play for the Bruins, and their announcer on. The Bruins announcer would always say a Johnny Rocket because
I can't stand.
I can't stand it either. I don't know if this is just like a New England thing or whether it's everywhere, but there's a restaurant, Johnny Rockets. Is that a thing everywhere?
Yeah, it's a franchise.
Okay, I wasn't sure if it was like an everywhere franchise or just a New England thing, but that's the meaning behind it, and so I love it.
Yeah, oh yeah, for sure. And then we pretty much after this, that was the last thing the Isles fans had anything to cheer about.
Can we skip to the end of the game? Can we go to the next game?
I know, seriously. Well, I'll make this as painless as possible. 3-2, Erik Haula drives to the net, outworks Brassard in front of the net and Adam Pellick. I thought they both played way too soft down low. You can't have, just like Eberle beforehand, you can't, if you're Derek Brassard and you're playing center, you cannot have one hand on the stick leaning in. Like, I don't even know what you're trying to do there. But Eric Howla just, he got his own rebound after he drove to the net, and he put it past Greiss, and that was, that would be the game winner. Dougie Hamilton made it 4-2 with a slapper in the last minute of the second. Really shot it through a screen. Pelech and Pollock were both in front screening Greiss. I didn't think Greiss had a shot on it. And then Hurricanes iced the game 5-2 with an empty netter. Svechnikov, just off the faceoff, just throws the afterburners on. I mean, this kid is fast, and he just flies through the aisles. D finishes the empty netter, game over, 5-2 Carolina. And it goes to show you that we are still woefully outmatched when we play a fast team like that. So going into the stats, and the stats were ugly for this game. Isles were outshot 40-19. Carolina had more than double the shots the Isles had. Isles took the advantage in the faceoffs, 51.5%, which is nice to see them starting to win faceoffs. Isles' power play looked good that game, 2-for-5, but no 5-on-5 goals that game. No even strength goals. That's a little concerning. Carolina went 0-for-2, so the kill looked good. Isles 20 hits to Carolina 17. Carolina had 21 blocked shots. Isles had 15. Isles had 9 giveaways to Carolina's 15, but Carolina had 12 takeaways to the Isles 5. The analytics, not much prettier than that. Corsi, Carolina 64, almost 65% to the Isles 35. Carolina's Corsi darlings. I mean, that's their makeup. That's their game. So no surprise there, but they just absolutely dominated us. High danger chances, 78.95%. Almost 79% of the high danger chances went to Carolina. That's scary. And expected goals for Carolina, 77.4 to the Isles, 22.6. And the worst, to me, the worst part of all, when the Isles needed it the most and they needed an amount of comeback, they had 2 shots on goal in the third period. 2!
That was definitely the worst. Definitely the worst part of the game.
Well, Carolina, you got to remember, Carolina, this is them coming. They're firing on all cylinders right now.
Yeah.
You know, they held the Lightning to no shots when they played them in a period not too long ago, and 1 shot in the third. So they have their system figured out, and they're firing on all cylinders. So, you know, I think this is a really, really good team that we ran into. And after that game, now Carolina jumped up to a 5-0 start to this season. So the last 2 games the Isles played, you know, going back to the Edmonton game and then Carolina, those teams are both 5-0. So they're 10-0 total, and they Isles got outscored 10-4. So I don't know if that's something where you say, do you take solace in that and say, well, we played 2 really good teams, so it's not as bad as it seems, or do you say we're just not at the level of the really good teams right now, you know, at the start of the season? Tough to say.
Maybe right now, but right. See where it plays out, you know.
Right. Okay, yeah, for sure. And so we finished the second half of a back-to-back, and the Isles kind of picking up where they left off last season. They're a real good team on the second half of a back-to-back. We head back home, we play the Panthers, and we're going to call this game, if you guys are okay with it, the Varley Redemption game. He played great, especially in the third period of this game. Isles beat the Cats in the shootout 3-2, so first shootout of the season. This game was on the 12th. Florida actually takes the lead on us. Malgin fires a ripper past Varley at the bottom of the circle. Really nice pass from Dadonov. I thought Komarov needed to tighten up. I thought he lost his man. The Isles got a little scrambly in their own zone there. And again, kind of in a similar spot. I think Varley's getting beat on these in-close shots. And look, that's kind of part of the way the game is played now, is these guys, they have such great releases. But I just want to see him stop a few of those. But anyway, so Florida jumps up 1-0. Isles even the score on a beautiful goal from Anders Lee. He blasts the top shelf. He's on the top of the slot. And Barzy being Barzy, takes the puck behind the net, waits, kind of lets everything develop. Lee gets open, threads the needle, and Anders Lee isn't missing from there. Buries it, 1-1. Great, great goal. Josh Bailey, elite Josh Bailey, puts the Isles up 2-1 late in the second off the rush. He goes top shelf. Eberle gives him the feed and was kind of going down and just was able to put the puck up high. Nice quick release on the shot and gave the Isles what they needed with that 2-1 lead. The third period was where I had a problem in this game, and it felt like the ice was completely tilted. The Isles were protecting the lead instead of trying to go for the throat. And when they do that, you know what happens. They collapse, and eventually, shot. Eventually, it's going to go in, and that's exactly what happened. The Panthers finally tied up the game with about 6 minutes to go. Evgeny Dadonov gets the goal from Jonathan Huberdeau. He fires a shot through Pulock, beats Varley high, basically through the screen. I'd like to see Pulock try to get in front of that, block the shot. We go to overtime. Nobody scores. We go to the shootout, and Brock Nelson's the lone shootout goal scorer, and Varley stopped all three Panthers shooters. So I thought this was a statement game for Varley. I thought he kept the Isles in it in the third as much as he possibly could be expected to, and then he shut the door in the shootout. So that's kind of how I saw it. Ben, you see it the same way?
100%. He stepped up. It was his game. He was like, all right, this is my Islanders thing. I don't remember whether it was in the end of the second period or beginning of the third. I was at the game, so I was able to make the trip up, or I guess down for me, for the game. And there was, I don't remember when during the game it was, but there was a time, it might have been at 2-1, where the fans were singing Varley. And it was the first, I think we were seeing on Twitter over the summer, when's the first game where we're going to get that Varley chant? Obviously there was Lehner, Greiser. When's the first Varley? That was the first. And I think that there was something psychological behind that for Varlamov. At least there would have been for me. I mean, for such an, first of all, polarizing fan base, but also for such a passionate and loud fan base to get behind you in the way they got behind their two Jennings winning goaltenders. That was a mouthful.
Say that three times fast.
Yeah, exactly. Last year, to do that with him, especially, you know, the guys that were, you know, chanting, "We want Lehner." They're behind him, you know.
Yeah, and he made big saves. He 13 of 14 shots he stopped in the third period. Isles were woefully outshot in the third period, 14 to 5, and that's starting to become a little bit of a trend. They got to pick their game up in the third period for sure.
I think six games. I know we're only five-sixths of the way there, you know, summing up the podcast, summing up the order, but you're starting to try to figure out patterns. Like the first two games, the Islanders played really well in the second period. You're trying to identify patterns, and then they like fall apart in the second period against Carolina. So it's hard to, you know, find what's going on. And it's not just that patterns are hard to come by because it's six games. Also, patterns are hard to come by because Islanders have been so inconsistent. Like, I don't think there's a single defenseman who has played well three of the six games. I really don't.
Yeah, and part of that is it's the beginning of the season, right? Yeah, so these guys are still finding their legs.
Like, no one's been awful all six games, and no one's been good all six games. Like, Pelech and Pulock were really good against Washington and Winnipeg. And, like, Pulock fell off the face of the earth. I don't know what happened to him.
Well, I mean, you got to remember, too, that they went up against, with Edmonton, they're going up against Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, and those guys are going to make anybody look stupid. So,
right, but shut down Ovechkin a week, like, the week before. I'm not saying that it's terrible to get beat by everyone. It's just, like, to fall off the face of the earth after shutting down two of the best lines in hockey in the Ovechkin line and the Scheifele line, and it wasn't just against Edmonton. I thought that that he wasn't particularly good against Florida, and I think he wasn't particularly good against against the Blues either. And it's weird because against Florida and against the Blues, Pelech stepped it up, and Pulock didn't.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah,
you almost wanted him to sit for Dobson because of how well Boychuk has played.
Yeah, and notable that this was the first game that Dobson was now scratched in. He was back up in the press box. Yeah.
If you're going to get this kind of effort out of Boychuk every time you scratch Dobson, though, that'd be great.
Yeah,
you scratch Boychuk once every 2 weeks and he just gets
Boychuk
fired up.
Boychuk has been amazing. I think since he came back, because he was poor against Washington and Winnipeg, and then he scratched and he's, like you said, Kenny, if he's going to have this reaction after getting scratched, We might not need to trade him before the end of his contract.
For sure, for sure. So we'll get through the stats, and then I want to ask you guys a question here. So with the Florida game, Florida outshot the Isles 37-28. They beat us on the faceoffs 53.3% to 46.7%. Still close. Power plays went goose eggs for both teams. Florida went 0 for 3. Isles went 0 for 1. Again, another game where the Isles aren't drawing a lot of penalties because they're not possessing the puck all that much. Florida out hit the Isles 28-24. Isles had 20 block shots to Florida's 16. Giveaways were even at 20, and the Isles had 10 takeaways to Florida's 3, so that was good. But again, the big glaring stat was the shots in the third period, 14-5. Advanced stats or analytics. Isles dropped that one, the Corsi stat, to the Panthers. Panthers had 55.45% of the Corsi 4. Isles actually had 60% of the high danger chances for. And expected goals for were pretty even. Florida edged out the Isles 54% to 45%. So the notable thing for me this game was Matt Martin was scratched. And it's funny because before this game, I was kind of starting to formulate some ideas for the show, and I wanted to kick this question to you guys, and it just so happened that Martin was scratched. Has this roster, has this team outgrown the best fourth line in hockey? And what I mean by that is, does this team still need to rely on them, or can they make moves from within and not have to not need Casey Cizikas to score 20 goals? Can they fill in their top three lines and just have their fourth line be a true fourth line, which is checking in and to play 30 to 45 seconds and get off and let the horses back out? Kenny, I mean, you know, we talk about the fourth line a lot. What do you think?
It looks like the NHL has outgrown that fourth line. They just look a little bit slower and it's not as durable anymore. Like that just doesn't look like that style of play with those three players is as effective as it was in years past. Cizikas scoring 20 goals. I mean, I don't even know if the Islanders are using that fourth line as if he can ever do that again. I don't know. I mean, I don't think it's so much that the Islanders as a team have outgrown that, because their third line isn't really good enough yet to justify taking minutes away from that fourth line. It just looks like the NHL has kind of outgrown it.
Yeah, it's somewhere like you said, it's somewhere in between almost. Because, like, the fourth line, well, it has a lot to do with the fact that Casey Cizikas has been injured, does it not? I mean, I'm not sure if this is a hot take anymore because Martin's now been scratched for 2 games in a row. Now, I mean, a spoiler alert for the Blues game. But to me, when either Cizikas or Clutterbuck isn't playing, Matt Martin shouldn't play. Ross Johnson is better unless Martin has the chemistry with Cizikas and Clutterbuck. Right. He just offers you more. And not to mention he offers you more for, it doesn't matter now, but he offers you more for less than half the cap hit. But when they're together, you're not, I think it's too early to say because Cizikas has been injured for, what, the last 4 games, last 3 games?
No, well, I think this was the first game that Casey
was out.
This was the first game. The Panthers game was the first one that Casey missed, and immediately Trotz said, okay, Matt, you're going to go up in the press box.
And the guy that looked like he didn't belong in the NHL the most wasn't on the fourth line. It was Michael Dalcal. That guy he's like, oh, Nelson, how many penalties did you have in the first 2 games? All right, watch this. Hold my beer. And then he just taking penalties, doesn't look, I'm not impressed. You know what I mean? When Cizikas and Eberle get healthy, he's going to be the guy to sit, and Wahlstrom's going to stay in the lineup.
Oh, I hope. Please.
I think so too. And I kind of mentioned some things to you guys earlier, and I can't remember if we mentioned them in the show or not, but I've kind of felt like the fourth line, the problem is, and I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, your depth chart and how you're deploying your roster. When the fourth line is together and they're taking a spot, they're essentially acting as your third line. Because what's happening is now your Leo Komarovs, your Brassards, who I don't think have really, you know, lit the world on fire. Now, you know, that's a group that needs to kind of be your fourth line. And you almost need to have more scoring punch in your third line. And when you're playing, you know, the E equals MC squared line, you're doing it for energy purposes. You're not really expecting goals. You're kind of expecting them to set the tone. I don't think they've done that to start the season. And I don't think that it's justifiable now to have that line out there for quote-unquote energy, then have a checking line or two checking lines. And then, so what, you're going to put all your eggs in the Matt Barzal basket and he's going to get, you know, he's going to get top D pairing matchups against him and he's not going to score and he's going to get frustrated. And you saw that at the beginning of this season. So that was more my question. It has nothing to do with, I think Casey is a third line center and I think that he's outgrown his line mates big time. And I think that they kind of hold him back a little bit now. And the durability thing concerns me too. And look, it's because these guys play hard. I applaud the service that they've given this team. But I think when you have a fourth line where Komarov's your center and you've got Ross Johnston and maybe Michael Dalcol out there, they might surprise you with a goal or two here and there. And then you've got, you know, your top three lines then that can maybe score and do a little bit more. I don't know. Because I feel like when that line's together, you've got two fourth lines. And I just think that it takes the threat away from this team, especially when you're chasing the game. And they've done a lot of that to start the season. They've been chasing leads. And you just don't have the goal scorers in your lineup to take a lead back. So that was kind of why I wanted to bring that up. So
I completely agree. Yeah. Those great points.
Okay, so this takes us to the Monday matinee, which I thought was probably maybe the most, I wouldn't say the best win of the season, but the most exciting win of the season. Typical traditional Islanders Columbus Day matinee. Thomas Greiss is back in the net going against Jordan Binnington. Look, these are the defending Stanley Cup champs, and I thought they played like it most of the game. The Isles were trailing 2-0 through most of the game, and then they just come back and a flurry of goals the last 5 minutes of the game, and they get the win. But we'll take you through it. Blues jump up 1-0. Braden Schenn opens a scoring on, unfortunately, off of Beauvillier's stick. Shen's throwing the puck to the net. Bovey's, you know, trying to take away the passing lane. It tips off his shaft and goes in. So Blues kind of got a break on that one. Blues then go up 2-0 in the second. A nasty Vlad Tarasenko wrist shot on the power play. Maybe Greiss stops that sometimes, but that was just a dirty shot.
Yeah, that's Tarasenko for you. I mean, if that was like someone else, then maybe it's an issue, but I'll let that happen.
I wanted him so badly. When the Blues were tanking last year before they got to be a Stanley Cup winners, he was the guy I wanted.
Oh, yeah. There were a lot of rumors that he was going to get moved because they were in the basement. Yeah.
Him and Mark Stone.
Yep, for sure. For sure.
Imagine getting one of those guys to play with Barzal and Lee.
Well, maybe we got one of those guys because this was also the debut of Oliver Wahlstrom. And man, did he have a game. There wasn't much to see in the first two periods and really a majority of the third period also, but Wahlstrom made one play. First of all, his first two shifts, he's throwing the body around. He's involved, and you just could see that he was focused. In the second period, he made a phenomenal play where he cut to the net. He kind of was angling and stick handling around the Blues defenders and got in one-on-one with Binnington and just missed the backhand. And then, you know, after the whistle, he puts his hands up on his head, like, look up to the heavens, like, I can't believe I missed that, because that would have been a highlight reel first goal of your NHL career. But Wahlstrom looked great, and as he went on, as the game went on, he got more and more comfortable, and by the end of the game, he was playing on the first line with Barzal and with Lee, which is, to me, exactly where he should be. If Eberle's out of the lineup, and again, he was out this game, Cizikas was out, if those guys are out, you need skill on that top line. You cannot have Tom Kunackle, who played, 60-70% of the game on the first line. You can't have that and expect to score goals. I'm sorry. It just doesn't happen. So the Isles had nothing on the board until 5.5 minutes left in the third period. Brock Nelson shoots a wrister past Binnington on the short side. Nice pass from Dalcol. It wasn't a great pass. It was kind of wobbly. It was more a fast wrist shot, and I think the angle that the puck came off of Nelson's stick threw Binnington off a little bit because he probably should have stopped it. But hey, got the Islanders on the board. And then 30 seconds left, goalie's pulled. Barzi just throws one to the net that redirects off. I didn't see if it was Steen or O'Reilly. It was one of those two guys. And puck goes in, tie game. I thought two players that kept this play alive deserve a shout out. Number one, that was elite Josh Bailey, made a great play along the boards to keep the puck moving. And Johnny Boychuk, holding the blue line, blocks the clear, dives, poke checks the stick down, the puck down into the zone, kept the play going, and then Barzi did his thing. I thought those guys, they battled. They battled to get that game tied up. And then we had all the momentum going into overtime. And I'll take Matt Barzal 3-on-3 overtime every day of the week. Barzi gets the puck, circles the net, blown coverage. Taves was wide open. Barzi feeds it to him, and he just rips it home. Isles win 3-2. And I just thought, man, this could be the game now that builds the confidence for this team going forward. Barzi was amped. He was giddy in the postgame with Shannon. He's laughing. He couldn't even contain himself.
They were laughing on the bench. You see how happy they all were. Man, they were jumping. Crazy, man. And like you said, I mean, hey, they did this in the preseason. They came from behind with a couple wins late, pulled the goalie. Like, hey, this could be a thing for us this season. This isn't the first time they've done this. They've done this about two or three times now since the preseason started. So this is, maybe it's not a fluke, you know? Maybe we just know what we're doing with the goalie pulled, or just in general with the extra man, at least having a game plan of, like, what to do, which, you know, it's foreign to us. But it just, we've never had that. At least recently.
Thank you. Thank you, Jimmy Hiller. Oh,
yeah. It's so obviously the coaching, right? I mean, these are the same players. So imagine what we would have done with this guy last year.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to say it's coaching because, I mean, look at these same, the same core when Doug Weight was coaching them versus Barry Trotz. So, yeah, you have to. I mean, coaching has a lot to do with it.
And he's been here for 5 minutes.
Yeah. So it's like, yeah. Well, because the Isles have talent on that power play. It's not like they've got a bunch of scrubs out there. Like, they've got talent. They just were too deliberate. And the best thing they did, I know this is the beat up Nick Leddy podcast, but the best thing they did was move Leddy to that bumper role and took him away from the quarterback spot. And all of a sudden now they have a shot threat and they're not deliberate. So, I mean, this guy sees things that fans have seen for 2 years, but hey. So stats this game, we actually, surprisingly, when I looked at the numbers, the Isles outshot the Blues 32-23. We got absolutely scorched in the faceoff circle. Blues won 61% of the faceoffs to the Isles 39%. So that was a little rough. St. Louis went 1-for-2 on the power play. Isles, again, not drawing many penalties. We went 0-for-1 on the power play there. We did score with the extra man. So, you know, it's unofficially a power play goal, kind of. Hits Isles 33 to St. Louis's 22. St. Louis had 22 blocks to the Isles 18. Giveaways, St. Louis had 17. Isles had 23 giveaways. And Isles had 9 takeaways to the Blues 8. We finally did a little bit of the outshooting in the third period when we needed it, which was good. Outshot the Blues 18-6. So we had the Cup champs reeling towards the end there, which is nice to see. We actually won the Corsi battle too. We Isles had 52.22% of Corsi to the Blues 47.78. High danger chances for Isles had 62.5% to St. Louis's 37.5, and expected goals for Isles had 60.55 to St. Louis's 39.45. So, you know, they picked it up when they needed to. They got a little bit of luck, but St. Louis is a good team, and this hopefully will conclude the gauntlet that the Isles have had to run through to start the season. I mean, I know they had 5 of 6 games at home, but man, to play the Caps, the Blues, I know the Jets were banged up and they're missing some of their D, but the Jets are a good team. The Hurricanes, the Oilers, I mean, they didn't have an easy game to start the season. And I know it's the NHL and there are no easy games, but man, they were put through the grinder to start the season.
Yeah, that was a pretty rough schedule to start. I mean, even Winnipeg, since that last, I mean, they started the season pretty bad, but then they ran off a couple in a row and they're about 500. They're 4-3 now. So they're no slouch. And that's our next game, actually, coming up the 17th. We're playing Winnipeg in Winnipeg. And then we're going to Columbus, right, on Saturday night?
Yeah, Columbus on Saturday. Yeah, we got the Jets on Thursday, Columbus on Saturday. Then they got a little bit of a break, and they head to Arizona and Ottawa back-to-back. So, yeah, it'll be good. Now, I want to go back to Wahlstrom. We talked about Dobson and his debut. He played two games and I thought looked pretty good, and then he went back up in the press box. Wahlstrom, I thought Wahlstrom was one of the Isles' best forwards this game. I really do. Do you, Ben, you think that he is going to stick around, or do you think that he's going to be sent back down since he's waiver exempt?
I hope so. I really do, really, 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 really hope so. It has a lot to do for me. I think on Twitter today, the reports were that Eberle is 50-50. Sorry, Cizikas is 50-50 to come to on the road trip. Eberle is doubtful. So I think that the guy that would hypothetically send Wahlstrom down is Eberle, not Cizikas. So if Cizikas is back, you'd like to think they'd put Eberle on IR so they don't have to send anybody down. And they'd like make it retroactive so that it starts, so that it can end sooner. And then when Eberle's back, that's the question. And I think if Eberle and Cizikas are both back for Thursday, I would say they probably do send him back down. But I think if Eberle's not back and he has another game or two to prove himself, then he can show it and send, hopefully, Del Cole back down, which would make all of our dreams come true. So,
well, I mean, I know it's cool for everybody to be, you know, just tearing this kid down, Del Cole, but, like, I mean, I don't think he's the top six player. I think we've seen that now.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we've seen it. I'm not opposed to him being a cheap fourth liner for $700,000. And, but again, that's part of the problem with, I know I'm going to keep going back to this fourth line, but our fourth line makes a lot of money for a fourth line. Dal Cole makes $700,000, I believe, $700,000 or $800,000. He makes less than $1 million. You can have Ross Johnston, you can have Michael Dal Cole, and those guys combined are making less than $2 million. That should be your fourth line. And, you know, but that being said, if through some miracle Eberle and Cizikas are both healthy and they can play, I still think Wahlstrom should play. I think Wahlstrom should take Dal Cole's spot, and I think Kunackle should you know, sit for sure. And then and Dal Cole, I think, should sit. Yeah. You know,
Kunackle's analytics have been awful. Have you seen that?
I haven't. I try not to look at much with Tom Kunackle, to be honest.
Oh my god. You see, first of all, Noah Dobson is because the way it works is it combines goals against and goals for, and Kunackle is like bottom left. So top right corner is the best. Bottom left corner is the worst. Top left corner is really good goals against, bad goals for, and then bottom right is good goals for, bad goals against. So the guy in the top left corner, which is really good goals against, not good goals, not as good, guess who it is?
I don't know, Kenny. You got a guess?
I have no idea.
Noah Dobson.
Really?
If you had to pick one of those categories, obviously not the top right corner, because obviously, but, you know, a good goals against, meh goals for is what Barry Trotz dreams about in his sleep.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's what Dobson is screaming. Kunackle is like, there's no one even close to him. He's awful on both sides of the ice. And even playing with Barzal and Lee didn't improve those for him. He somehow still found a way to be awful.
Well, was it Trotz who said that he called Tom Kunackle a Swiss Army knife, where he said he can kind of play in any role? I agree with that. I agree with that. Yeah. But I think that, look, we have a very, very, very small sample size with Oliver Wahlstrom. We have one game, but the dude looks like he should be playing in this top six. And so you have to then, I don't care if he's waiver exempt or not, you have to then make some decisions. Tom Kunackle should not be in the lineup if he doesn't have to be. I don't think Cizikas and Eberle are going to be back super quickly. I think you got a couple of games there, but I think it should be Dal Col that sits out and not Wahlstrom when push comes to shove. So,
one's saying that Dal Col can't be Kunackle's replacement next year. I think that's perfect. We're just saying that he can't be Plan B to Artemi Panarin.
Right.
They're two different sides of the spectrum.
Sure. No, I'm with you on that. All right, so we're kind of running low on time. I do want to quickly get to the natural hat trick, and we can make it real quick here. We're six games in. I think we've got a decent enough chunk of the season to just kind of briefly touch on what is the one thing that we each feel the Isles need to improve on. So, Kenny, I'll start with you. Six games in. Give me one thing that they should be doing better. It could be a player. It could be a more of a concept or something that they're struggling with. Give me the one thing.
I'm looking at the doc. I'm not going to say what you're going to say. I think it would be that position that, you know, we debated on many natural hat tricks before. You know, the Dal Col, Hosang, Kunackle, Bovely, whoever that position is going to be. And it looks like, you know, it looks like they kind of addressed it already by calling up Wahlstrom. I think that Dal Col, once all these guys come back from injury, is going to, you know, he's going to be the odd man out. I don't think he's played well enough. I don't know even what he brings to the table. I don't think he brings any offense to the table as far as the top six goes. Maybe he's responsible enough for the third line role, but he doesn't bring any offense. You know, we discussed that you can't just get your third line has to be able to score. And I don't think he does anything that Wahlstrom doesn't already do better. So I think that's a position the Islanders need to upgrade. And it looks like they've already kind of taken those steps. Let's see what happens when Eberle and Cizikas are healthy. Who sticks around? I think I put my money on it being Wahlstrom just based on one game and what I saw from the preseason.
Yeah, can't argue with that. Ben, what do you got?
For me, and ours are kind of adjacent, and the Blues game outlines, I'm going to use it as an example because I think it's a really good sense of what I wanted to get at. I wanted to talk about defensive zone and neutral zone turnovers. The Islanders actually, weirdly, not against the Blues, but have actually been good on the faceoff dot. I don't know if they were just like, okay, we were bad at the power play faceoffs and last year and good at defending last year, and we're just going to flip that on its head and be bad at defending, good at power plays and faceoffs. But they have been good at faceoffs. And, you know, you win faceoffs, you said it earlier, Damon, and they just can't clear the zone. They can't get through the neutral zone. And because I know you're going to go into transition game, but just the amount of giveaways, it's baffling. That was like the thing that the Islanders were best at last year. I mean, guys like Pulak and Pelech, this is the shutdown pair. This is the guy that in the first game of the season made Ovechkin look like, well, Michael Dal Col. And now they're, you know, they're giving up the puck left and right. I don't even know what I'd like to think it's just a fluke and that they're going to figure it out. And it's the kind of thing that Trotz won't let fly. So you have to think that they will.
Yeah. My subject is definitely adjacent to yours. Mine was a transition game from the defensive zone to the offensive zone. The turnovers are very concerning to me. There's just a lack of cleanliness on their breakouts. And, you know, maybe part of it, and this is maybe conspiracy theory here or just, you know, me trying to make an excuse up, but they have played 5 of 6 games at the Coliseum, and the ice has looked really bad. Like really bad. The puck is bouncing around all over. So it doesn't lend itself to a clean game. You know, last season the Isles, they were so systematic. They'd get the puck, they'd go D to D, they'd find an outlet man, they'd chip the puck in, they'd go hard forecheck, and it was this surge of energy from the defensive zone to the offensive zone, and they would battle and they would earn the turnovers, and that's where they would get their scoring chances. And this year, it's just like they're stuck in neutral. They can't get past the red line. They are not having clean breakout passes. And it's not just one guy. It's everyone on the blue line is struggling with that first pass out. And it's I can't remember. I think it was Butch who said something. He said the Isles have no momentum going into their own zone because the D just is struggling. And the Blues game was real bad. I thought the Panthers game was real bad. They had so many times where they're on their blue line and all they need to do is battle and chip it a foot past the blue line to get out of their own zone. And they're just flopping all over and whiffing on the puck and soft clearing chances. That stuff has to be cleaned up. You cannot have a defense that's turning the puck over and they're getting trapped. In the Blues game, what was Wahlstrom? They said he was out there. He got stuck out there for like almost 3 minutes.
And he was the first guy off the ice.
Right, right. Because they failed to clear it out. Not once, not twice, multiple times. And that was just one, you know, one of many times where they've done that so far this season. So for me, they clean up the transition game. They're going to make life so much easier for themselves. And I don't know what it is because it's the same guys. They didn't just all of a sudden forget how to make a pass. And again, it's early in the season. I get all that. But that to me is what they need to clean up if they want to have success and start building on wins here.
Yeah, Damon, your topic about transition, mine about the turnovers. That's why the zone times look so ugly. If you looked at why they couldn't get any momentum going, they had two shots on goal in the third period or something against the it's because they touched the puck. You talk about against the Blues, why they couldn't get anything going until for the first 55 minutes of the game. It's because they couldn't touch the puck.
Yeah, they're not making life easier on themselves for sure. So that to me is mine. So I think Kenny, I think you hit it on the head. I think Dal Col that spot. I think it's Wahlstrom's to lose now, and let's see how that goes. And I think Dal Col needs to have a really, really good game against the Jets if he gets that opportunity, because eventually Eberle's coming back and Casey's coming back, and those guys are not going to be scratched. So something's got to give.
Yeah, he just doesn't have it, dude. It's just I don't see any glimpse of it. He just looks like he's a step behind. What is he? Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I don't know.
And not
I don't
going anywhere. Knows. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I don't think he knows either. Yeah. Well, boys, I think that's just going to about wrap it up. You guys have any closing thoughts before we bid each other farewell?
I don't know if I can wait until Thursday for another Islanders game. After that that Monday matinee, that comeback, I can't wait.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough game against the Jets. You know, they're going to want revenge, and it's in Winnipeg, which is always a fun building to play in. But that was the scene of that epic Islanders comeback last year towards the end of the season that really galvanized this team for the postseason. So
the first intro.
Our first intro. If you're a keen listener, you picked up on that. Yeah, well, guys, as always, thank you so much. We appreciate, you know, you listening to us. We know you have many choices out there. And we appreciate every, you know, each and every one of you. The support's been great. We're on SoundCloud. We're on Spotify. We're on iTunes. Subscribe, like. We've got a Facebook page up that we're going to start doing post-game live broadcasts on our Facebook page. So just search for Long Island Sound on Facebook. Give us a like. Join the group. Have some fun there with some comments. We'd appreciate it. And we'll be back at it probably after these next two games against Winnipeg and Columbus. So for Ben and Kenny, I'm Damon. Thanks for listening. Later.
Peace.
Later, boys.